Now, on my tombstone, there's going to be two dates, and in between, probably many of you have heard that poem, something about, on the tombstone, there'll be two dates, and between those two dates is a dash. And that dash representing the very, very quickly passing phase of our lives. And what will be said of us? Song has come to mean a lot to me. What will be said of us? Will it be said that, will our children say of us that the Lord was our passion, and that we found our glory in the cross, and that we served them the way that we were servant leaders to our families, and tried to mirror the way Christ has been a servant leader to us. So think about that a little bit. Welcome. This morning we are going to try and do a little bit of catch up. All the snow days fell on. There was two sessions scheduled for husband and wife, and I had been planning on doing both of those, and the snow days always seem to just continue to change that. So this morning we're going to try and get through both sessions on the man and his wife. It's session 19, page 65 in your book. For anybody that still needs a number, hopefully we will not have one more snow day. But if we do, let's see. Okay, hold on. There we go. Those slides were just going to keep right on going. So, but if anybody needs the number, there it is. All right, looks like I have been. Okay. I'd like to thank this morning's sponsor, Communication Management Company, for sponsoring the coffee and donuts and refreshments. Also, just a reminder, a couple of books that we did make available to you, ones that we certainly recommend. Randy Alcorn's The Purity Principle for $10, and Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. Very, very practical books on how to live out our lives with our wives and with our children. So, and the way we handle our personal purity. Now, this morning's session, like I said, is on a man and his wife. Just really, really encourage you. We're starting to get a couple manhood plans in. I'm getting ready to start printing the certificates. There's not very many there yet, so please, next week is our last session. Bring your manhood plans. Get to working on them today. Hopefully you get a little bit more, maybe some more practical stuff that you can work on to get to your manhood plan. It's been quite a journey. It's one I've certainly enjoyed. I trust you've enjoyed. We've learned that manhood means rejecting passivity, accepting responsibility, leading courageously, and expecting God's greater reward. And then we've spent some time on the practical side of things, on dealing with fathers and sons, spent some time on finances. And I know Glenn did one session on some practical ways to lead in your home and in your marriage. And this morning we're going to look much more detail at husband and wife. And, you know, there was one other thing. This is what happens when I don't make a note. I just assumed that I would remember to say this. But last week, I believe Jay requested prayer for my wife and my son. And I want to thank you for praying. That was quite an adventure for me. I knew it was going to be an adventure for me to begin with. We had talked about this for a while and decided that it would be neat if she has a close friend that's been in service in Nicaragua for a while. And I said, you know, why not, when the baby gets 8 months, you know, she'll take the baby and travel and see them. And I spend a week as Mr. Mom. And I said, you know, I would make lighthearted jokes that I'm going to have a new appreciation for what being a mom is all about. And like that would be fun. And it was a very good experience. And I certainly do have a huge appreciation for what my wife does and the constant drain. You know, at work, I can step out and have breaks. Guess what? No breaks. it was a very good week. And then Monday night, I got a phone call from her, and I could hear that she was frantic. And she was describing, and you know, I did not see our 8-month-old son, but what she described was seesaw breathing. And for any of you that have seen a baby with difficulty breathing, that means that their airway passages aren't open and their stomach is trying to suck air in, and it sucks their chest down so their belly goes up and like that. And that's how she was describing that he was breathing. She said he was pale, he was listless, and just wasn't himself. And I was envisioning several, you know, children that I've seen in the back of my ambulance that didn't make it with what she was describing. And so I was rather excited. They were at they were on their way to the doctor's office. She called me, and they were at the doctor's office, and I could hear that she was frantic, and she said that the doctor said it's an emergency, but nothing is happening. And at that point, I don't remember if she said, "Listen, I got to go quick," but the phone call ended, and I had a phone number. But the only thing that I knew to say to the recorded message coming back to me was no habla español. and I couldn't understand the message, and I couldn't get through for a number of hours. So, I can tell you this, surrender's not fun. And it was not a pleasant experience. I certainly hit my knees, and God almost seemed to say to me, you know, I surrendered my son for you. You can do the same for me. And I did that. Also got as many people as I could praying. I talked to Jay and said, "Hey, get the men to pray. I'm not sure what's going on yet." But he did spend a little over a day in the hospital in Nicaragua. They got nebulizer treatments, opened up his airways, IV antibiotics. And he had pneumonia. Wednesday evening at LaGuardia Airport, I picked them up and brought them home, and I feel complete again. So thank you for praying. I really, really do appreciate it. So this morning we're going to talk about a husband and wife. For those of you not married, hopefully we can get a perspective on marriage. But you know, I'm guessing for many of you, there's never been a moment where someone sat down and said, and maybe you've had this moment. I hope to have some of these moments with my sons, but usually somebody didn't sit down with you and said, "Let's talk about women. Let's get a perspective on how women think, how they speak, and where we're going with them so we can have a lifetime being successful." And maybe it's because no man in your life understands women. That could be. But it can have a great deal of impact on the amount of satisfaction in our lives, the security of our children. But we are very different. And sometimes it's fun just to laugh at those differences. And this is one of my favorite little stories. I'm sure many of you have heard it before. I hope you don't mind hearing it again. It's by columnist Dave Barry. Roger and Elaine had been seeing each other regularly, and then one evening, as they were driving home after dating, a thought occurred to Elaine, and without really thinking, she says aloud, "Roger, do you realize that as of today, we've been seeing each other for exactly 6 months?" Then there is silence in the car. To Elaine, it seems like a very loud silence. She thinks to herself, "Oh boy, I wonder if that bothered him, what I said. Maybe he's feeling confined by a relationship. Maybe he thinks I'm trying to push him into some kind of obligation that he doesn't want or isn't sure of." And Roger's thinking, 6 months. And Elaine is thinking, "But hey, I'm not so sure I want this kind of relationship either. Sometimes I wish I had a little more space so I'd have time to think about whether I really want to keep going the way we are, moving steadily towards, I mean, where are we going? And are we just going to keep seeing each other at this level of intimacy? And are we headed towards marriage, towards children, towards a life together? Am I ready for this level of commitment? Do I even know this person?" And Roger's thinking, 6 months. I love this story. Let's see. 6 months ago, February, that's when we started going out. That was right after I had the car at the dealer's, which means, let me check the odometer. Whoa, I'm overdue for an oil change. And Elaine is thinking, he's upset. I can see it on his face. Maybe he has sensed, even before I sensed it, that I was feeling some reservations. Yet, I bet that's it. That's why he's so reluctant to say anything right now about his feelings. He's afraid of being rejected. And Roger's thinking, and I'm going to have them look at the transmission again too. I don't care what the mechanic said, it's still not shifting right. And Elaine is thinking, see, he's angry. And I don't blame him. I'd be angry too. I feel so guilty putting him through this because I can't help the way I feel. I'm just not sure. And Roger's thinking, they'll probably say it's only a 90-day warranty. And Elaine is thinking, maybe I'm just too idealistic, waiting for a knight to come riding up on his horse. Roger, Elaine says out loud. What? Says Roger, startled. Please don't torture yourself like this, she says, her eyes beginning to fill with tears. Maybe I should never have, oh, I feel so... What? Roger says. I'm such a fool, Elaine sobs. I mean, I know there's no knight. I really know that. It's silly. There's no knight, and there's no horse. Starting to feel sorry for this guy? There's no horse? Says Roger. You think I'm a fool, don't you? Elaine says. No, says Roger, glad you finally know a correct answer. It's just that I need some time, Elaine says. There's a 15-second pause while Roger, thinking as fast as he can, tries to come up with a safe response. Finally, he comes up with one he thinks might work. Yes, he says. Elaine, deeply moved, touches his hand. Oh, Roger, do you really feel that way? She says. What way? Says Roger. That way about time, says Elaine. Oh, says Roger, yes. Elaine turns to face him and gazes deeply into his eyes. causing him to become very nervous about what she might say next. Thank you, Roger, she says. Thank you, says Roger. Then he takes her home, and she lies on her bed, a conflicted, tortured soul, and weeps until dawn. Whereas when Roger gets back to his place, he opens a bag of Doritos, turns on the TV, and immediately gets deeply involved in a rerun of a tennis match between two Czechoslovakians he's never heard of. The next day, Elaine will call her closest friend, or perhaps two of them, and they will talk about this situation for 6 straight hours. In painstaking detail, they will analyze everything she said and everything he said, going over it time and time again, exploring every word, every expression, every gesture for nuances of meaning, considering every possible ramification. They will continue to discuss this subject off and on for weeks. Meanwhile, Roger, while playing racquetball one day with a mutual friend of his and Elaine's, will pause just before his serve and say, Norm, did Elaine ever own a horse? Understanding these differences is absolutely a huge task. And it's a task, it can be an incredibly joyful adventure. It can be painful, it can be frustrating. And if we allow ourselves to get soaked up in our pride and in our little hurts, we can let the simplest misunderstandings have a huge negative impact on our lives. Another resource that I definitely would recommend that you spend some time with is Emerson Eggerich's Love and Respect series. Now, he talks about pink and blue hearing aids. And the story, Roger and Elaine, very obvious. Both of them were talking completely different planets. And clearly we're not communicating. But, you know, and it's work. It takes work to learn to communicate. My 3-year-old daughter came up with the word the other day. And you know, if you don't understand the word, you can work to understand the word. But when you think you understand the word, you stop working to understand what is really trying to be said. And when it comes to communicating with our wives, it's for me anyway, maybe you guys are way beyond on this, but for me, it becomes a constant work to not just understand, to realize that while I may hear the words, I may not understand her heart. And it's become an exciting lifelong journey to learn to know her heart And I'd really challenge you to do that. My three-year-old came up with a word the other day, and she, I didn't know what the word was, and it took me a lot of work to figure out what she was saying. She said, she came up and she said, "Daddy, Daddy, I want be a ragger." I said, "A what? A ragger?" And this a tiger? No, not a tiger. And I tried all kinds of different things. Finally, it wasn't a ragger, it was a rarger. And I learned that a rarger is anything that goes rar. So but because I love my daughter, I'm willing to work at understanding what she's saying. And in the same way, we have to spend the time. And it can be just as exciting and funny sometimes to learn to understand our wives. 2,000 years ago, a simple fisherman who had spent 3 years with Jesus Christ made a very profound statement. Let's take a look at it. 1 Peter 3:7, "In the same way you husbands must give honor to your wives, treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so your prayers will not be hindered." The King James says it this way: "Likewise, dwell with them according to knowledge." Here it says, "Treat your wife with understanding." And that phrase, "according to knowledge," indicates that you need more information. You don't get knowledge just by guessing. Because very often we will guess wrong. She's not a man, she's different. We talked about that. Another important thing that I think in the words there, in the same way as what? Do you know what came just before this section? Does anybody know? Just before this verse in 1 Peter 3, there's a verse to the wives. It also starts with likewise. What comes at the end of 1 Peter 2? Listen to this. "He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges righteously. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were like sheep gone astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." Likewise, like Jesus sacrificed himself, like Jesus loved us with a sacrificial love, in that way, and you're familiar with the verse, as Christ loved the church is the way we're supposed to love our wives. And in that way, we're supposed to live with our wives in an understanding way, according to knowledge. Speaks to, the verse speaks to three key points. In an understanding way, speaks to insight and skill. Again, assuming that you're speaking her language and understanding where she's at, it could be a huge and one of the biggest mistakes in your life. You don't necessarily speak their language. It's something that we need to learn. We kind of tend to think that everybody around us is learning, speaks the way that we do. But we have to have insight with skill, and it can't happen by accident. And it's different for every couple. Every woman is different. It's not that. And that's probably why it's such a constant challenge, is you can't write a textbook to explain the differences between a textbook to explain everything about the way a woman thinks, because every woman thinks differently. In my life, I was second born. I was mama's boy in a way. I had a very good relationship with my mom. I remember I enjoyed cooking. I didn't have any sisters, so. And I didn't mind cooking the dishes. I didn't enjoy so much, but I enjoyed spending time in the kitchen, and I spent a lot of time with my mom, and miss her dearly. But it resulted in me not necessarily having to carry. I didn't have to carry near the responsibilities that my older brother did. And that's just the way it was. So I was somewhat of a mama's boy, and I'm now talking to you on the mother wound. I did not carry near the responsibility that I that I should have, and that I needed to learn a lot of stuff. My wife was the oldest, born to Dale Nault. I don't know if you know the Naults and some of their work ethic, but she worked alongside of her father on a hog farm. And is incredibly industrious, strong. The Naults seem like they can just work all day long. She worked alongside of her father there. He had a hog nursery, so she worked right alongside of him, castrating little piggies. Keeps me walking a straight line, I can tell you that. So. But those are the type of two different people with a lot of dynamics that we needed to learn a lot about each other. In her mind, wasting time is taking more than 10 minutes to clean up the kitchen if it can be done in 5, because you don't play until your work is done. In my mind, wasting time is spending 5 minutes cleaning the kitchen and not enjoying yourself. It would be much better use of your time to spend an hour cleaning the kitchen and enjoy yourself and maybe get in a food fight and those kind of things in the process. But those are different perspectives. And that can, in dwelling together in a house, can create an incredible amount of friction and frustration. And I didn't really realize this until a number of years into our marriage, but what I started to do was just kind of close off. And just, I'd find that, so I would just withdraw myself and she would finish the work, and we were both pretty unhappy about the situation. And in an understanding way, we need insight and skill, and it's our job, as we've been learning as leaders, to learn how to be that sacrificial leader to our wives. We need to keep moving here. Second key phrase in this verse is, and grant her honor. Speaks to appreciation and value. And I think that's a lot of what the woman's movement is women crying out for value. Constantly tell your wife that you love her. She feels constantly connected to her surroundings. And this is something that was very valuable for me to learn, is if her surroundings, and she feels a part, and it's part of her relational aspect of being a woman, she feels a part of everything that's surrounding her. And if her house is dirty and unkempt, she feels dirty and unkempt because she feels connected. I can very, very easily completely disconnect from my surroundings. And that's, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. That is a lot of what being a man allows us to do. Some very key insight in the book of Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. The idea that a waffle each has a little pocket of and that men have, you know, we can separate all our lives into these separate little pockets. Spaghetti is all woven together in one big pile. Everything is connected in that way. The final key part in that verse is that fellow heir in life. This speaks to equality and worth. We're equal, but we're different. When women feel less than equal, they feel they need to defend who they are. Peter says three things right at the outset. Listen, she's a woman, she's not like you, she's not a man. That means you're going to have to learn woman speak. You're going to have to learn that skill. Live with your wives in an understanding way. You can't get enough information. I know, so those of you guys that are dating or just getting ready to get married, you think you know everything there is to know, maybe, about that, about this woman that you're getting married to. Boy, what a surprise that you are in for. Joking aside, it is a joy. And I love my wife dearly and love getting to know her heart. But she processes things differently than I do. She's my fellow heir in life. Before God, she is equal to me. We have different roles. We're not the same. We're very, very different, but we are equal. We're going to look at three quick organizational models. And going to finish with what I believe is the biblical model and how to be successful in our relationship with women. The first model that we want to look at is called the traditional model, and this is We want to look at a couple scriptures here in relation to this. Jesus told them, "In this world the kings and great men lord it over their people, yet they are called friend of the people. But among you it will be different. Those who are the greatest among you should take the lowest rank, and the leader should be like a servant." Top-down traditional marriage looks like this, with God, and then the husband, and then the wife. And last year when I taught this, I know some guys came up to me and said that they thought I was maybe borderline on blasphemy and stepping away from Scripture. And I would just like to, hopefully I can communicate this clearly. If not, please come and talk with me afterwards. But I believe that this model has done a lot of damage in our Mennonite and conservative marriages. And I don't think that it's been intentionally. I think we've lived with this with good intentions. But I don't believe this is the biblical model. The top-down traditional marriage, the husband's position becomes that of king. Leadership style is that of lord. The goal ends up becoming personal benefits. And the effects on the marriage is that there is usually a winner and a loser. And many times the man as well, but often the woman loses identity, sense of significance, feeling like she has a voice, and can become intimidated and experience a loss of respect. I want to go back to this this top-down and model and explain to you why I think this has done a lot of damage. Oftentimes, it ends up with the man over the woman, and the woman feeling like I'm the benefactor and I'm the boss. And the reason that this is, I think, is such a dangerous organizational model for marriage is if you look at a business structure, or in my workplace, we have an incident command structure. If there's a massive emergency and there's, you know, people injured and people in danger, we have to very quickly set up, and the same thing would be true in a military setting. There is a command structure. And if I'm the incident commander, okay, I am overall responsible for everything that happens. Under me, I would have a chief of operations, a logistics officer, a finance, and I would have a number of different positions who would answer to me. Under operations, you would have multiple team leaders, and each team functioning a certain... Now, if a team leader makes a mistake, who answers to me for that mistake? The operations officer, if I'm the incident commander. Am I right? And if a team leader persistently makes mistakes, who am I going to replace? I'm going to replace that operations officer. I'm not going to go as incident commander, and because that operations officer is responsible, and he is held accountable for the actions of everyone under him. Now, in your marriage, who is held accountable to God for whether or not your wife submits to you? Are you held accountable to God for whether or not your wife submits to you and obeys the commands that she's given in your relationship? No, she answers to God for that. Does it change anything? Are you responsible to enforce that submission on her? The command later to submit, husbands submit to, or wives submit to your husbands, is not given to the husbands. That command is given to the wives. We're equal fellow heirs in life. I remember, I think that this model has been taught a lot with good intentions and taught with the husband living in a sacrificial leadership role, loving his wife. But when we put in this organizational, if we keep this organizational chart, I think oftentimes the husbands get feeling frustrated too, feeling like they're responsible and they need to enforce this role on their wives, and it doesn't work. Because you're not, and eventually... You're at some point no longer going to be held accountable for your children as well. They will be held accountable to God for the decision they make on what He does in the call, on what they do with the call He places on their lives. To me, this was just eye-opening. You know, we've been talking in our Sunday school classes here a lot about the principle of Ezekiel being called to be the watchman on the wall. God told Ezekiel, if you, I think it's in Ezekiel 3, he told Ezekiel, if you are the watchman, and if the watchman doesn't sound the trumpet when danger is approaching, the people that die, their blood is going to be on his head. He said that's the same way for you. If you don't sound the trumpet and warn the people of their sin, their blood is going to be on your head. But if you sound the trumpet and they don't listen, then they're responsible for their own deaths. I was talking about this with my brother the other night, and he said, you know, he says, we're called to be the watchmen, but we're not called to be the policemen. We don't enforce that, but our responsibility is to love and cherish and lead and let the enforcing up to God. All right, let's keep moving. On that same line, I remember, and again, the organizational chart has often been taught in love, but I remember a Bill Gothard thing that he used to use, and I think a lot of the Bill Gothard's material, don't get me wrong, but there was an image, a picture of, I think the husband was the hammer, the wife was the nail, and the children were the boards. And I think that gets it a little bit out of perspective. I really do. So think about that. Second model of marriage that we want to take a brief look at is called the 50-50 identical marriage. I don't think it's one that's as prevalent in our conservative circles, but it is certainly very, very prevalent in the churches in America today. A scripture that's often used for that is there's Galatians 3:28, there's no longer Jew or Gentile, slave free, male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Which is very true. Again, we talked about that. Equal heirs in life, but with different roles. This model, the organizational chart, they're both equal. And it's leaderless. There is no leader. The husband's position becomes that of partner. And no leader. The idea is equality. You give 50%, I get 50%, and we'll work it out. A lot of businessmen here. What business model fails nearly 90% of the time? Partnerships, equal partnerships. They don't last. Why? I think a lot of it comes to do with this idea of equality. Because a leaderless society does not work either. The goal in mind becomes equality. But the effects on marriage is difficult balance and hard falls. Because of our fallen nature, we all end up being somewhat selfish. How many people ever read the book Animal Farm? A number of you. There's a phrase in there, I don't know if you remember, the pigs, they end up, the animals end up taking over the farm and looking for equality. And the pigs end up completely dominating everyone else. And they make this statement. They said, we're all equal here. It's just that some are more equal than others. And in a partnership, that's exactly what happened. All right, this last model, we're going to call the side-by-side biblical marriage. And this is what I believe Scripture very consistently teaches in our marriages. Ephesians 5:23, for a husband is the head of his wife as Christ is head of the church. He is the Savior of his body, the church. Puts us in bold company, men. For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her. For the husbands, that means a cross in his life and dying to yourself as a sacrificial leader to your wife. Man shall leave his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united in one. The organizational chart looks like this. God, with the side-by-side biblical marriage, with that arrow of responsibility, that arrow of leading, that arrow of initiation. Husband's position is that of head. Leadership style is responsible and sacrificial leadership, which is what we have been doing our best to teach here throughout the course of these sessions. Sacrificial leadership with your wife. How that means and how you flesh that out. So much of this comes down to the way we interact with our wives on a daily basis. So, and even this, I speak this when I started hearing this material, I thought, well, okay, how can I sacrifice myself to my wife and live as a sacrificial leader, get that over and done with, then I can go on. And it's not that. It is a daily way that we live out our lives with our wives. For one of the things that meant for me, after supper, I love to sit on Lazy Boy, do a little reading, relax. Well, you know what? For me, that meant giving that up and helping with the dishes every night. And it's not something that I necessarily enjoy doing, but it's one little way that I can become, and that's just a small thing, but one little way that I can become a part of my wife's world and live as a sacrificial leader to her and love her, and saying that her well-being is more important than my happiness. The goal in mind is oneness. And the effects on the marriage are health, happiness, and harmony, because we're living in the roles that God has designed for us to live. And again, just going back to this verse, the kings of the Gentiles, in the King James it says, here we say, Jesus told them, in this world the kings and great men lord it over their people, yet they are called friend of the people. But among you it will be different. Those who are the greatest among you should take the lowest rank, and the leader should be like a servant. Who's more important, the one who sits at the table or the one that serves? The one who sits at the table, of course, but not here. For I am among you as one who serves. And as that scripture said, in that same way, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge and in an understanding way. We're going to kind of switch gears a little bit. There are some core roles, some core issues and responses that we want to look at. We are still in the first section if we're filling out the blanks. But the husband is head, and his role becomes that of servant leader. The woman's role, let's take this verse from Titus 2, 4, and 5. Those older women must train the younger women to love their husbands and their children, to live wisely and be pure, to work in their homes, to do good, and to be submissive to their husbands. Then they will not bring shame on the word of God. The wife's role is helper and becomes that of servant lover. Nurturing and supporting. No one does that better than a woman can. It's the way she's made. And that's the way, and God made her that way to fulfill the role and complete the picture of who He is. We're going to go into the next section. I'm going to do my best to keep this moving. We're going to look at three core issues of marriage and by core, I'll look at definition of core here. Core is something small but essential ingredient that every marriage must not ignore, neglect, or compromise if it is to be overall successful. So, some core issues. First of all, we're going to look at some core roles that God gives a husband and a wife in marriage. The core roles, the wife as that of helper. Proverbs 31 describes this kind of woman, an excellent wife who can find her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her, and her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Very few families that when they finished running the race of life and have had a woman like this in their lives don't look back and say, we're so glad we had a wife or mother like that who invested in us, loved us, supported us, and cared for us. Napoleon, during his reign in France, said, France doesn't need greater armies, France needs better mothers. A woman has an unbelievable impact. A mom has an unbelievable impact, and a supporting wife has an unbelievable impact on her husband's life. God says that's her core role. That's not necessarily all she does. Every woman's life is unique, but God has called her to be the helper, the servant lover. Husband has been called to be the head. And again, the head does not mean boss, as we talked about with the organizational charts of marriage. It doesn't mean that we lord it over, but that we be the head of our wives as Christ is the head of the church and gave himself for it. Let's look to Christ for that example of leadership. Some core responsibilities that empower your mate's role. These are some of these core responsibilities. I think this chart is in your book. For the husband, is to heap honor and praise on his wife. Your wife needs to know that she's important, that she's valuable. Let's take a look here again at 1 Peter 3:7, right there in the middle, and grant her honor. In Proverbs 31, again, her husband praises her. There are many virtuous and capable women in the world, but you surpass them all. Do you heap that kind of honor on your wife? Core roles from the core responsibility from the wife to her husband is that of submission. And again, submission does not mean a yes person. Maybe more of an idea of like a co-pilot, a second set of eyes. But again, the commandment to her is to submit, and that's her core responsibility. That command's not to the husband. It's also not a command to enable wrongdoing. Her first responsibility is to answer to God. Colossians 3:18 says, "Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting for those who belong to the Lord." All right, let's take a look at some core concerns that meet your mate's deepest needs. Now, there are other core concerns that we're going to look at, but we're going to pick the top four concerns that a husband and wife each have and need from their partner to support the core responsibilities of honor and praise from the husband to the wife and submission from the wife to her husband. Let's look first at the wife's core roles. And for your wives that were here, Jason talked about this a lot, that you, us as husbands, desperately need compassion, companionship from our wives. We tend to be very, as men, we tend to be very, very lonely. But this companionship is very interpreted by us to mean I'm valuable and important. Second one is that of admiration. We desperately need to feel our wives' admiration and respect. That's the way God made us. I can be at work and be praised all day long about doing a good job, and if I come home and scuff my and walk into the kitchen with my dirty shoes on, not thinking about it, and I get criticized for making one dirty footprint on the floor, all that glory, that admiration that I felt throughout the day just gets sucked up just like that. And maybe it's not the same for you, but my wife has so much more impact on me than anyone else in my life. And if I feel her admiration, I can conquer the world. If I don't, I've got almost the life most of the strength sapped out of me. And it's just so exciting and dynamic when we can work together and provide these core concerns for each other. That also need that of support. In Desert Storm, they said there were 7 support soldiers for every combatant. There's also 50 full-time jobs in the States required to support every single soldier that was on the battlefield. And in a lot of ways, that is what we need. We need that support from our wives. And we lose that, a lot of that support, if she works out of the home full-time. We really do. The final core concern that we need from our wives is that of physical responsiveness. And there's a reason that we need that. God has created us this way. There's been some fairly recent studies done on something called pair bonding, and it's fascinating. You know, we talk about how women are so relational. You know, one of the, they have found what they call the bonding or the companionship hormone. There's a chemical that is present when someone feels connected with another person. It's called oxytocin. Now, oxytocin does a lot of things. It has a lot to do with the baby being born. But it also is a hormone that is very, very much connected with being emotionally connected with another person and with your surroundings. And guess what? Your wife has a lot of it. All women do. All the time. It's present in their system all the time. And guess what? How much do you have? None. It doesn't exist in your body except one time. And that is after your sexual climax. After a man's sexual climax, a large amount of oxytocin is released into his bloodstream. That's the one time that you have that connected hormone. And there's a reason that you feel so connected with your wife in that situation. An interesting thing that they're coming out with in some of these studies is saying that people that have multiple sexual partners, the levels of these hormones that are released in their body deteriorate incredibly. And it can be difficult to get that back. This was not a religious study that found this, but realizing that the connected value of sex deteriorates a huge amount when it's lived outside of God's plan. So there's a reason that you feel so connected to your wife at that point. From the wife, and this is what we're going to finish up on, and our responsibility, core concerns that the wife needs from her husband. We need that of companionship. She also needs, one of her core concerns is that of companionship, although it's more relational than recreational as ours. We're going to go through these, I'm just going to show them here on the list, and then we're going to look at some very practical things that we can do to provide these concerns that our wife has. Second one is that of security. Also, significance. And then emotional responsiveness rather than the physical responsiveness. Some things that we're going to look at, some things that you must do, some things that you can do, and some things that we hope that you'll have the courage to do to meet these core concerns of your wife. Companionship, must do. I believe this is not an option. We must regularly date our wives and talk about your world and hers. That relational connectedness. A can do? Develop a common play together. Something recreational to do together that you're able to connect. One of the things that my wife and I did from our very, very early dating years was play a lot of games. Table games, card games, and it's something that we've carried on and still do a great deal of together as a family, and I hope that we can continue to do that. Something I did in my home, even as a teenager, weekday evenings, many, many evenings, after supper was done, we would sit around and play Rook for hours on end with just our family. And was very, very much an emotional time of emotional connecting, something you can do. One thing that I've done is I bought my wife a set of golf clubs. She wasn't real thrilled about the idea at first, but I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to try. That would be something I thought would be fun to do together. So sure enough, she's a very competitive person, and didn't take long till she made a couple connections and saw that ball go far, and she's not necessarily hooked on golf, but it is something that we do enjoy doing together. So find something to do. Courage to do. For companionship, plan a special just for you getaway. It'll build great memories, strengthen your relationship, and encourage romance. You might want to get some advice from a trusted sister, someone trusted on rolling this out and make sure you're not missing something. On our 10th anniversary, I surprised my wife with a 4-day trip to Cozumel, Mexico. And we had a great time. I told her that we're going someplace warm, that she should prepare to go warm. You know, we'll be able to swim and stuff like that. But she didn't know how warm. And so it ended up she felt a little bit uncertain with what to pack, and then ended up with a bunch of long sleeve shirts because he wasn't sure how warm was going to be. And so just make sure that you are well prepared. Now, she certainly appreciated it, and it did. It was an awesome time. But I hope that you can have the courage to do that. From security, from time to time, tell your wife, "I am committed to you for life." This is a must-do. Your wife needs to hear this repeatedly. Just saying it on your wedding day isn't enough. I'll never forget at a family life conference, if you remember, if you've heard the testimony of the man who stepped down as head of a large university to care for his wife who was suffering with Alzheimer's, and they asked the question, Barbara Rainey asked the question of Dennis, "Would you love me like that?" And I remember standing there holding my wife's hands and looking her in the face and promising her that, and it was a neat experience for me, but what that did for my wife, it was amazing. So from time to time, take your wife's hands in yours, look her in the eye, and say, "Honey, I love you. I'm committed to you for life. Nothing's ever going to change that. I will love you no matter what condition you're in," and tell her that on a regular basis. Put it in writing if you want to. Multiple times. Security can do. Make sure you, and Glenn talked last week about finances. Huge thing for your wife's feeling security. Be careful how much responsibility you put in your wives. I know some women are very, very gifted in organizing and keeping track of the finances, but if you just dump that on her, it will greatly undermine her sense of security, because then all of a sudden she feels like it's her responsibility to make sure that there's enough money in the checkbook. Don't undermine her security in that way. Make sure she knows that things will be taken care of, a well thought out will, health insurance, savings plan within reason, and maybe, I don't know how you all feel about life insurance, but there needs to be something in place so that were you to pass away, she would know that funeral arrangements and everything else will be paid for. Do everything you can. I can't emphasize enough how important I believe it is for the woman to be at home, especially with young children. Provide financially so she doesn't have to work. For significance, a must-do. Regularly tell your wife how much you value what she does and how important she is to you. Thank her for every meal. And be sincere about that. A can-do, surprise your wife with a note of praise. Flowers, even better. Or a special night just to give her off with friends. Just to say thank you for all she does. Big gifts. Sometimes you have to buy gifts for your wife that you really can't afford just to communicate how significant that she is. Now, I'm not saying that you undermine the security by doing this, but some big gifts. Some emotional responsiveness. Regularly tell your wife that I love you. Some of you that comes very easy and natural to say. Some of you more difficult. Emotional responsiveness can do. Learn to set the time away and say, "Tell me how you're doing," in a quiet place where you can listen. And then listen. You don't have to fix it, but just listen. Be emotionally responsive to your wife. On special occasions, and this again, one of the biggest things we fear is rejection. Yeah, I think so much God has called wives to trust Him by trusting with their security. For us, we have to trust with releasing our pride and fear and our fear of rejection. And oftentimes, that's why it's so difficult for us to communicate that. We fear that rejection. Spell out in detail. Write a poem, sing a song, or just write a nice long letter telling her exactly what she means to you. Be specific, be romantic. And we're going to just finish with six reasons why I think it's so important that we follow the biblical side-by-side marriage. It positions a man and a woman for what they naturally do best. They naturally do it best because that's the way God created us to be. It organizes a man and woman to complement each other rather than compete with each other. It creates an environment that is best for the healthy development of children. Children's security is so important. And if they don't have a secure relationship between their father and mother, it just undermines that security completely. It becomes the ideal. And then we can train our children from an early age to embrace and a way that they can live out their lives. It honors God's word and is blessed by Him. It's a way that we can be obedient. And it prospers and advances society as a whole, because that's how God created it to be. Abraham Lincoln said, "The strength of a nation lies in the homes of its people." And I believe that, and I believe that it's starting, that an improvement can be made starting with you, that you can choose to have the courage to sacrificially lead your wife, face the potential rejection, and love her the way that Christ loved you. Submit your manhood plans. If this is your first time here, welcome you to come up front for a first-time small group. Other than that, yes. Okay, yes. Graduation, March 22nd at 7 o'clock at New Covenant Church. New Covenant Mennonite Fellowship at Hinkletown. By next week, we need a count. Again, all you need to do to graduate is complete that manhood plan. Get that to us. We'll have some refreshments and we'll have a neat time. I believe there's a quartet coming to sing. Garmin, hopefully. Okay, I don't want to make any promises there then, but that is the plan. So we look forward to seeing you there. Yes?
Do you have time for questions yet?
Sure, I don't know if I have any answers, but...
Somebody asked a question, and I'm not sure what to think about it. They're talking about wives' submission to their husband. He asked the question, what should happen first, the husband loving his wife, or wife submitting to her husband?
Whichever one is the most mature should start first. Which one? What should start first? And that's the question. The answer is that it cannot, and it cannot be conditional on one. One cannot be conditional on the other. That makes sense? It's not, whether or not your wife submits to you does not release you of the responsibility to be obedient and love your wife sacrificially, regardless of whether or not she submits. The same thing is true for your wife. My wife and I have this little thing where we will say, please, Glenn or Jay would have much better answers than I would probably. My wife and I have this little thing where I will jokingly, if we get into a discussion, and I will say to her, submit. And she looks right back at me and says, die. And that is what we're called to do. It cannot be conditional. I think Emerson Eggerich is the one that made the comment about who should start first, the one who's the most mature. It can't be conditional.
I agree with that because there's commands where husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church and died. That's what you're saying. But also in 1 Peter 3, there's commands for wives to reverence their husbands so that by that example, the unbelieving husband becomes Christ.
That is exactly right. It can't be conditional. And one person faithfully, and I realize sometimes, and that's the other thing, is you cannot control, you know, that whole thing with the organizational chart, you cannot control what that other person does with it. People have the ability to inflict an incredible amount of pain on each other. It's part of their being evil in the world. And we have the ability and potential to inflict an incredible amount of pain on others. And this dynamic relationships that we can have with each other, it requires that we respond in love. And my favorite definition of love is that your well-being is more important than my happiness. And I think that that means a lot, that as if I unconditionally love my wife, and unconditional means whether or not she submits and whether or not she reverences me the way that the Bible commands. And the Bible commands that she reverences you even if you're a complete dirtbag. And her choosing to do that can win over that complete dirtbag. Yeah? Does that answer your question? Okay. All right. Yeah. Yes, wise children, fathers, bring out a crowd. We will need to know by next week how many are coming. Last year, we lost John Souter, who was our organizer. And so we handed out cards and all this stuff, and we just didn't make that happen this year. So by next week, if you could let us know how many people you're going to invite to graduation, we would really appreciate it. Anything else I'm missing, or any other questions that I might not, that I probably don't have answers to? New Covenant Mennonite Fellowship is, does anybody know the address? We will get that for you next week for sure. East Farmersville Road. Right across from Sensnick Furniture. If on 322, if you're heading east out of Ephrata, when you get to the Martin's Bike Shop, you make a right and just stay on that road, and the church is on the left. But we'll get directions and everything so that you can hand them out to your friends, your family, and let us know how many people you've invited and expect to come. I cut way into your small group time. Small group is so vital. Please spend some time with your small group and come up with a plan to show your wives that you love them this week.